Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, but this is my favorite episode. It is the Culinary Atlanta series that we've been running for quite some time, where we interview the best and the brightest doing the most interesting things in the world of culinary. Katie.
Yes.
Excited about this one?
Always.
Because there's a sports angle.
Yeah.
Which always excites you.
Of course.
And there's vodka, which always excites me.
There you go.
Everybody. It's a win-win.
There you go. Win-win. Yep.
All right. Today on Culinary Atlanta, we have with us Jeff Moses, and he is with 404 Vodka. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, tell us about 404 Vodka. How'd you get started in this venture?
Well, the original idea was to create a brand that represented the city of Atlanta. I mean, overall, the state of Georgia, but the brand is focused on the city, the city of Atlanta. Tried to create a brand that connected to the vodka, which is a little bit sweet on the finish, because I know that people in the South, and especially people in Georgia, like sweet things.
Absolutely. Is there going to be a sweet tea version of this coming shortly? I know you have a peach version. That was important to get that in there.
Yeah, the peach, it's a juicy peach flavor, and I think the brand needed a peach flavor. I think we would be run out of town if we didn't have a peach flavor.
You have to. It's the law. Yeah. Now, is there any kind of the future of this vodka? Are you going to like a 305 vodka for Miami and a 212 for New York? Is there a brand extension that's going to be associated with this?
No, probably not, because the if you're going to take an area code mm-hmm. and make it into a brand, the city has to be very loyal to itself. Mm-hmm. It has to, and Atlanta is one of those places that's loyal to the Falcons, is loyal to the Braves, and it's very the people in Atlanta are very proud of the city.
Absolutely.
So without that, you can't take something as iconic as an area code and make it into a brand.
So now for the vodka, tell us about how you came up with the vodka, like the process of making vodka.
Well, I made a brand called Humphrey Bogart Spirits in California before this, and that was a gin, a vodka, a rum.
The process is similar?
Yes. The process, when I make a beverage, I look at where the product is going to be sold.
Okay, and so you start there.
Yes, I try to connect the flavor profile of where it's going to be sold, because mm-hmm. there are different flavor profiles in every place in the world.
Sure.
So what sells here may not sell in Poland, or right. what sells in Poland may not sell in New York City. So I think the people of that location grow up a certain way. They become accustomed to certain flavors, and I think you have to stay true to those flavors.
So now this is distilled. That's the process of making it?
It is. We distill it from corn, which the reason being we use corn is corn finishes sweet. Mm-hmm. And so it's gluten-free. It has a sweetness to it. And since this brand is going to be sold in the South, especially the Southeast, and starting with Georgia, that it needed a sweet finish.
Now, when you're distilling something, is there how many times does it go through the distilling process?
Well, this is 6 times distilled.
Is that a lot or a little?
That is generally
a good amount.
That's yes. Anything more than 6 times distilled, you start to strip away the flavors.
Uh-huh.
And it is filtered twice. If you filter more than twice with a vodka, you'll strip the flavors out of it. So the balance is to keep the flavor, make it smooth, and make it an overall enjoyable, overall enjoyable on the palate.
So now when you're coming up with this, how much testing is involved in this? Or do you get it pretty close and then you're tweaking it? Or like, what are some of the variables you play with to get the flavor just right?
I think it took us 5 attempts to get this flavor profile, and the best way to do it is to bring people in and let them taste it. General spirits drinkers. They don't have to be vodka drinkers, but they should be spirits drinkers, because spirits drinkers are different than beer drinkers. They're different than wine drinkers.
Right.
So if you can please a group of people who are spirits drinkers, you're going in the right direction.
So now there's on the label, there's a big oak tree. What is the significance of that?
So when I got to Atlanta, I saw trees everywhere, and which
yes,
I
we're grew the up, city in the forest. That's our nickname.
I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I was used to trees and forests, and I thought the branding had to represent the city. If it, by representing the city, a tree had to be part of the branding.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used a silver tree. It's a southern live oak, which is the state tree, and a peach-colored tree for the peach flavor.
So now, but is there oak in the process of distilling? Or do you put it in oak, or like how does that play into it? Is it just symbolism?
It is just symbolism. And there are vodkas that are stored in oak and take on a brown tint to them, but they end up dry. They're much more dry than non-oaked vodka. And it's rare that, I mean, there are many different kinds of vodkas today. There's sparkling vodkas, there's oak-aged vodkas. And of course, there's 1,000 different flavored vodkas out there. And so we took one flavor, which represents the state of Georgia, with juicy peach and the regular vodka.
Now, does the vodka mix well with certain flavors?
It does, because it's sweet. It stands up to ice and sodas and juices and most of the vodkas on the market today are dry. They're made from grain or potato or grapes, but we thought that corn would represent the vodka well here because of the sweetness.
The sweetness and then the peach flavor.
Yes, it's
why is vodka like a Russian thing? Like, why do they have the monopoly on this?
Well, actually, I toured through Poland and Russia to get acquainted with this about 5 years ago. I went through Poland and Russia to look at the origins of vodka and they started making, especially Poland started making vodka with potatoes, fermenting potatoes, because they had a lot
of
potatoes.
That's what they had, right? Yes. That's usually what happens.
And those vodkas from Eastern Europe or Russia and Poland are much drier mm-hmm. in the finish because they eat a lot of proteins, sausages, meats, and they drink vodka with those foods.
And so it's meant to go with the foods that they consume there?
Yes. Overall, most beverages that were created in this world were created to accompany food.
Mm-hmm.
We've departed from that over the years, over the decades, over the centuries. But that beverage, whether it's a vodka or a whiskey, was meant to complement food wherever it was produced.
Now, you spent some time in the beer world, right?
I did.
You made a slight pivot into the distilled beverages.
I did. Somehow, it's like it's a training process. I think most people who work in spirits started in beer, went to wine, and
it's the evolution.
It's like a gateway to beverages, and so. I did. I started in craft beer in California, and I really enjoyed it. I started 15 years ago making the house brands for a large chain of stores called Beverages and More. And what I tried to do is expand their house brands. So, we call them gateway beers to get people to go from Budweiser, which is a very good beer, to Stone IPA.
More of the mass marketed to more of a craft, right? You needed that gateway, that bridge.
You have to lead people.
Right. Baby steps.
Because Budweiser drinkers will not go to...
They're very loyal.
The next beer, a Stone IPA.
Right.
It's too big. So I made lighter IPAs or session IPAs or session porters or stouts that had a little more flavor, mm-hmm. but were not as big as
the
a Lagunitas,
right.
double IPA.
So that you did for that that liquor firm? You did that for a while? Doing that type of work?
Sure. I about 10 years.
Wow. So you got good at it, right?
I did. I also made their soda brands.
Really? Craft soda?
Their craft sodas.
And how come there aren't more craft sodas?
Because craft sodas are expensive to make, and the shelf price doesn't reflect the cost
how much
of production.
Effort it is right. to make it.
And not like as if you make a bourbon, it's inexpensive. The price can reflect that, and then right. you can make a top shelf bourbon, and the price can reflect that.
But the consumer can discern, oh, that's yes. worth the money. But in soda, they are like, yes. look, I'm used to paying a dollar. So, you know, to pay $10 for a soda is a bridge yes. too far.
Exactly. Exactly.
But they do it for coffee. I mean, people that drop $6 or $8 for, you know, a fancy Starbucks drink.
It's true. And there are some craft sodas out there that just not many because there's the quantity produced, being able to sell a lot of craft soda generally doesn't happen.
Right. So now this is a craft vodka, though, right?
This is. And craft vodkas are defined by hand production, small batch. And so this is a small batch, hand-produced vodka. So we wouldn't call this a top shelf. We'd call it a call because it's priced as a call. So you have your well, call, top shelf, and then ultra premium. So our brand is affordable. What I try to do is make a top quality vodka
as affordably as possible.
Yes, as affordably as possible.
Now, when you were choosing that path, did you consider going ultra premium or like... is there a reason that you chose call?
I think the market is oversaturated with top shelf,
the higher end,
and ultra premium vodkas. And aside from some of the bigger brands, Belvedere, Grey Goose, generally vodka drinkers don't like to pay premium price for
really?
Vodkas.
No. So the people who like vodka are more price conscious.
Generally, yes, because it's more of a blending spirit.
Because mm-hmm. they know they're going to mix it with something.
Yes, yes. So, so if someone does, if they want to drink vodka straight or vodka on the rocks, they will buy an ultra premium. But most people blend vodka for cocktails.
Now, what's your favorite thing to mix it with?
I actually like it straight from the freezer. So I put it in the freezer. It gets ice cold. And it brings out the flavors of the vodka. And it actually even gets, the 404 vodka gets sweeter as
the
it gets colder.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you just drink it straight?
I prefer, because I'm a purist. I like the way things taste. I don't like putting salad dressing on a salad. I like drinking espresso straight.
Right. Because if you're going to buy it, then just enjoy it. It's got to kind of stand on its own.
I think I've trained my palate along the way to just want the pure flavors of whatever it is, food, beverage.
So when you go out to eat, like, you don't put a lot of condiments on things? Just
no. No condiments. No salt and pepper. No.
Now, tell me about the involvement of Frank Thomas. He played baseball. I think he's from Georgia. How was he involved in this project?
So Frank and I had a beer brand out of Chicago called Big Hurt Beer for many years. And
that was his nickname. He was the Big Hurt.
He was the Big Hurt.
For the Chicago White Sox Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Major League Baseball player.
Yes. And he and I started the production of that beer, I guess, about 8 years ago. And we became very good friends. And since that project, we were looking for another brand to produce. And I came across the 404 as a viable brand in Georgia. And
but this, you started from scratch. There was no 404, right? You invented this. This was your, you put together the flavoring. Everything is your vision.
Yes, yes. I did start this from scratch. And I relate back. I used to work in television, and I worked on pilots mainly. So we would start with a general idea and create it and build it into a show. And I believe I used those skills when I create brands, also beverage brands. You have an idea, create a flavor profile, create the packaging, and then produce it.
So the just like a pilot, you don't know it's good until the public tells you, right?
That is very difficult because sometimes a bad idea gets, or I should say a good idea turns into a bad product, and it's no one's fault. Mm-hmm. It's like a movie. You can have the best movie stars in the world and a really good script, and in the end it turns out bad,
right,
and
yeah.
you don't know why. It just happens.
But in this case, here you are. You're trying to get this off the ground and into the market here in Atlanta, or everywhere, I guess, or just primarily Atlanta at this point?
Well, we'll start with Atlanta, and Georgia Crown is very strong. Our distributor in Georgia is very strong in Georgia. So,
is it impossible to do it without a distributor? Like, could you go at it alone?
I can. I'm a wholesaler in the state of California, and I can get a wholesale license in the state of Georgia, so I can sell direct to retailers. But that Georgia's distributors are very strong, so it's best to have them on your side
to partner.
Whether it's Atlanta Beverage or United or Georgia Crown.
Do you normally just pick one, and that's who you kind of are aligned with, or can you be in all of them?
Well, there. You can have a different distributor for each county in the state of Georgia. I think there are 30-some counties. But if you have a good distributor, you want them to cover the whole state.
Right.
And so Georgia Crown does that.
And then so you can just pick one and then just partner with them, and then they'll help distribute it to all the counties?
That is easier for a startup brand. Generally, if a larger brand, say Jameson Whiskey came right into the state, they could pick separate counties.
Because they know that you're the best in DeKalb,
yes,
you're the best in Fulton, I'm going to partner with the best in each,
yes,
county one at a time.
Yes.
But that takes a lot of effort, right? Keep track of a lot of stuff.
It takes a lot of leverage to tell distributors which county they're going
right
to distribute in. And so
when you're starting out, just pick a good partner.
It is. It is. And selling beverages in the U.S., it's very important to have a good distributor because they're the gateway to retailers. And without them, without a good distributor on your side, your brand will stay local. Chances are it won't sell outside of your backyard.
So now you have the goal is first to do a great job here in Atlanta and penetrate the market and then get distribution in as many places as possible.
Yes, I think the ultimate goal is that people don't see the brand name anymore for what it represents. It just becomes a brand name,
mm-hmm,
like Kleenex, for example.
Right.
Kleenex is a tissue that you,
right,
you know, you sneeze into. At some point, Kleenex became a brand idea. And so we know the people in Atlanta will recognize the 404, but as it starts to grow, and there are people who don't know what the 404 area code is, they'll look at it as a quality brand.
Right, that's my vodka that I get.
Yes, okay. I like 404. And,
right,
and if you look at brands that come from other countries that have a meaning in that country but no meaning here, people continue to buy that product here because it's good, it's quality, they like the packaging, and they connect with the flavor profile.
Right. So now, when you have a distributor, is it a thing where, like, I got a distributor, now you sit back and then they just do all the work and get it in all the stores, or you still have to kind of do some work to get it into all the
places
you want it to be?
There was a time that distributors built brands,
mm-hmm,
but they have too many brands today. So they rely on the brand owners to...
That's part of your responsibility.
Yes.
Not only do you have to create the vodka,
you
got
to
also go out and sell the vodka.
We have to promote it.
Promote it.
We have to sample it. We have to get people excited about it. We have to involve ourselves in festivals. And if you don't do that today, if you create a brand, hand it over to a distributor, chances are the brand will die.
Even if you're George Clooney, it seems like he did pretty well.
Yes. George Clooney is the one exception. But George Clooney did go out and promote the brand, and he used his celebrity to get the brand into retailers, and he put the effort into it. Just like when Frank and I created Big Hurt Beer, Frank went out and promoted that beer.
He had to show up, right?
He went to Costco's and did samplings.
Right.
And,
well, you got to leverage what resources you have.
That's right. We had events in New York City and bars and restaurants. And
so we're going to see him around here?
Yes. Actually, he is... one of the reasons he wanted to be partners in the brand is that he could come down and spend time in Georgia because he loves it here.
He still has ties to Georgia?
He has family in Columbus, which is where he grew up. But through baseball and through his friendships with the Lee Burns, he still loves to come back here and he's celebrated here.
Yeah,
he gets a little recognition. So.
Now that you have the brand, you have this partnership with Georgia Crown, you have Frank Thomas on board, now you're just putting the pedal to the ground and just trying to get out and be known to the restaurateurs and everybody about this vodka, right? That's what you're doing now? That's where your effort is? Because you've done the hard part about you built the pilot's in the can, right? Now we got to get it out for people to enjoy it.
That's true. Now you have to get people to sit and watch the pilot. There is a magic that happens with beverages that catch on and consumers, we call it sell through. So we put it up on the shelf and someone buys it and then another bottle replaces it. And for beverage to be, especially in the market today, the oversaturated beverage market that we have today, there's some magic that has to happen where consumers have to connect with your brand. And then I'm talking about the packaging, the branding, and then they have to drink it and it has to hit them the right way. And if it doesn't, there's so many, like I said, we're in a saturated market. There's so many products out there. They'll move on to the next brand and try something new.
So it's got to wow them or else it's just kind of just move on to the next one or they won't ask for it by name.
Right. I wish there was a formula that worked with creating successful beverages, but there isn't. And I can only relate it back to movies. You have an idea, you put the components together, you make it, and you put it out there. And for some reason, people go and watch it, or they don't. And some movies are great, and no one watches them, and some movies are bad, and people go and watch them. So I could say I can make the best vodka brand possible and everybody will buy it, and it just doesn't happen that way.
So there's no shortcut. You got to kind of do the work every time, right?
Some brands that I've created I thought would be really big, and other brands that I've created that I didn't think were very good sold a lot.
They caught on.
Yep. Just never know.
Got to keep swinging. That's what Frank Thomas would say. You got to keep swinging.
Unless you're Budweiser and you can...
Right. You have the distribution to force it down people's throat.
Yes, yes. But I'm not picking on Budweiser. They make great products. They have great people who work for them.
Right.
And they can test the products out in the market. As small producers, we have to go on our gut. What we think will sell, you have to know your location, know your where you're selling your product, and you have to be able to connect your brand, your branding, your flavor profiles with that place. And once you become successful in your backyard, then you start to expand out. But you can't move out of your backyard until it's successful.
Right. So that's just part of the process. So now what do you need more of? You need more restaurants to have this? You need it to be more visible at different events? What do you need more of?
What we have to do is create and offer retailers what it is they need. Mm-hmm. Because retailers are in charge these days. They are...
And a retailer, though, can be a liquor store. It could be like what? How do you define retailer? Like a Costco is a retailer, right?
Well, there's on and off premise. Off premise is liquor stores, anywhere where it's not consumed on that
location.
Buying
a bottle and leaving.
Right. Can it be liquor stores, grocery stores, and on premise is anywhere where you consume the alcohol, which is bars, restaurants, festivals.
But a call brand, is that something? If I'm at a restaurant, do I ask for 404, or that's just the one they give me?
Well, we hope that we can be a call brand, but well also. So we, many bars and restaurants use lower quality spirits in their well because they're blended and made into cocktails. But we're offering a quality vodka that's priced as a well. So hopefully we'll get into their well and also be on call.
Mm-hmm.
So call is that first level of vodkas or spirit. And as you go up,
but they're
talk
the
about
one,
it in a bar or restaurant.
Right, but they're the ones you ask for by name.
Yes, yes, that's basically it. And then your top shelf is the most expensive spirits. So we want to be a call brand that's used as a well also.
Right, and because it's affordable.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, for you, you have Frank Thomas on board. Is part of the marketing to go and get other kind of celebrity? You want some rapper to mention it in a song? Like how do you go about getting the word out? I mean, that's good for business, right?
It is.
Katie raps. She'll make a rap.
Baseball and raps. That's brands tend to take on a life of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And you can force the image onto the public, but the best way to go about it is to take your brand, put it out on the shelf, and let it evolve. See where you want to take it. See,
really? So you have to be that patient?
To me, it's because it builds the brand organically. If we want this brand, say we wanted 404 to be the hip-hop brand,
right?
It may not be accepted by the hip-hop community, and we're wasting our time and effort trying to force that. So we put it on the shelf, we go out and do events, and we see who likes it. And it has a lot to do with the flavor profile and the visual aspect of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it will flourish in Buckhead, and maybe it will flourish.
So you don't know.
We don't know.
So you're just going to let it, just put it out there and let the people decide.
To me, I like that because
it's organic and true and authentic.
Then the brand is grounded in what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And so you have no kind of gut feel, or you're trying to be neutral and you don't want to influence anything?
We're hoping that George Clooney will.
He's got a few dollars now.
We'll represent the brand, but no. And we'd love to be accepted by the hip-hop community because Atlanta has great music.
Right.
And we'd love to be accepted by the sports community. Frank has some very good friends in the
sure.
Hall of Fame.
Chipper Jones.
For Jones, Greg Maddux.
Right.
And so we'd love for them to come on board. And so we'd like it to be a brand that's accepted by everybody. And that's partially why the branding is simple. I like to think of it as, and I used this the other day, as kind of a Rorschach brand that you can interpret and
whatever you see in it
is what it is.
Now, for you, launching this and doing this and doing all this work, is this enjoyable for you? This is kind of what gives you a rush and you're excited every day to get out there and tell the story?
I love creating brands and the production of the brands. I'm not as good a promoter as I'd like to be, but I do like to go to festivals and have people taste because I want to see their reaction from the bottle, picking up the bottle, what the flavor profile is to them. But the bottling is the most difficult. The first bottling, and I spent last week bottling 650 cases, and I'd like to be there and
oversee
the effort in, because a million things can go wrong.
Right,
the caps, the labels, the fill. So I like being there, although it's incredibly hard work. I think I broke my arm lifting up. We produced 24,000 pounds of vodka, and we did it all by hand.
Wow.
And it is a lot of work. And the people at Dalton Distillery worked incredibly hard. And it's very hot up there, too. But I stayed up there for a week, and I ate chicken livers and catfish.
So you just immersed yourself in the culture of North Georgia.
I think maybe I'd like to do like a catfish flavor next week.
Right.
They are the great food up in Dalton.
And now for you, now you got they're in bottles now, and then you're getting them out there and let the community decide.
Yes, we're going to Georgia Crown is going to put the product on the shelf, and then we just watch. We watch and we move in a direction that helps the brand.
And then, so right now, if somebody wanted to learn more about the vodka and get it in their store or get it in their restaurant, where should they go?
They can go to 404vodka.com.
The number 4, the number 0, and the number 4vodka.com.
Yes, that's a good place to start. And then we'll start listing what retailers will carry.
As you start getting that going. And yes. Then Georgia Crown is putting it right now into different places as well, right?
Yes, yes.
And that's what they do. That's their secret sauce.
Their difficult job to have retailers purchase it.
Right, because there's only so much shelf space.
Yes.
That's the thing. Like you said, it's oversaturated. So if yours goes in, something's got to go out.
Right.
Right?
That is true.
They don't.
And if you look at our website, I projected the brand to be not a nightlife brand, but a city brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the brand represents that. The photographs that we have on the site are people out at night at cocktail bars. And so if that's the direction that the brand takes, then great, because I'd like the 404 to be a brand that's about fun and nightlife and bars and clubs. And but like I said, in the end, the public will decide what the brand's going to be.
Well, good stuff. Jeff Moses, 404 Vodka. You can learn more at 404vodka.com. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and best of luck.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Culinary Atlanta.